Hey everybody, welcome to your off-week content for the Gimme the Loot podcast. Rebroadcasting this week is our interview with Jesse Jurdak, cosplayer, streamer, and legitimate all-around stand-up guy. Big guy, very big guy. But anyway, he was an absolute delight to talk to, was so generous with his time coming on to his show. So be sure to get over to his Twitch and Twitter and give him some follows, show him some love. Let him know you appreciate him coming by to talk painting minis and some other cool stuff on the cosplay side of things. As a reminder, Gimme the Loot, it's not family-friendly content. The streams tend to be a little bit more reserved, but we don't particularly make an effort to keep it clean. If you want to catch these streams when they're live and be able to interact with us and our guests, make sure you get over to twitch.tv/GMDLcast and give us a follow. Head over to Twitter at GMDLcast and give us a follow for announcements when we add shows. And to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/GMDLcast to see what benefits you can get from supporting the Party of Five. Thanks, and hope you enjoy the rebroadcast of this show. Boom, sneak attack. We're live, everybody. Just when you least expect it. Hey, gang. Welcome to another episode of the Guest Quest, the tabletop role-playing game community interview live stream brought to you by the Gimme the Loot podcast, the Dungeons & Dragons 5th edition actual play podcast that's operating at, I think technically have a quorum for this show, so I think we're still okay. Jazz may hop in a minute. Harland was so intimidated by our guest's swolness that he could not make the stream. And I did, in fact, book our guest really mostly to make Harland feel bad about his arms. Joining us tonight is Jesse. Jesse is YouTuber, mini painter, Twitch streamer, cosplayer, and kind of a big dude, and actor. Let's not forget actor, and D&D podcaster, all a renaissance man, Jesse Jurdak. Jesse, thank you for joining us, sir.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
And here to the only Pentagoon who could be bothered to participate in the stream this evening is Jamie. Jamie, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I am not a renaissance man. I don't know what the opposite of that is. Caveman? Something like that.
Republican. Yeah. Republican. So it's going to get political real quick, Jesse. I'm sorry. I hope you'll be. Thanks for joining us, man. Like I said, Jazz may hop on in a bit. You going to kind of bop around a little bit, if you don't mind, if that's cool. Because you really do have a lot of stuff doing. I want to start with the minis painting, because that's something that's always really fascinated me as a talent. And I do want to establish those are actual miniatures, right? These aren't just because the force perspective, because you're kind of a big dude, those could be yard gnomes and I wouldn't know.
Yeah, no, they're 2 or 3 feet tall. I'm just enormous. No, like I've got a bunch of right over here. I just posted about this one a lot. It's like a little pirate dude. He'll be blurry as hell and you won't be able to see him. So this is just nothing. But I mean, that's actual size. It's like smaller than my thumb.
Oops, we're gonna make you, let's see if we can make you bigger so that you can highlight this. Look how big I am. There we go. Yeah, he went giant.
Pretty intimidating. But yeah, there's like, I just painted this guy and brought him on a D&D cruise, actually. He's nice. Gonna be out of focus. But Mark Meir was our DM. He did a fantastic job. Mark Meir is an underrated talent in the industry. But yeah, I paint a lot of minis. I think it's fun. It's cathartic. You know, it's this very zen thing where you're like, you get to shut out the world and you're just in this teeny tiny little bitty space. Sometimes I stream it, sometimes I don't.
It's so small. So and legitimate questions here, because I started playing D&D way back in first edition when Dragon Magazine was a thing. And I would always see the ads for the lead miniatures back when, when we were cool with them being lead. And they would actually do reviews of them, like, oh, you got to sand the flashing off and everything. And so, but they were never anything that I had as a kid. So they always kind of held this weird mystical place in the canon of D&D for me. And now that it's become very much an art form, legitimate question, do you have to wait? Like, are there extra tiny little brushes? Are there normal brushes? What are the tools that you use kind of going into painting them?
That's a great question. There's this misconception that you have to have this teeny tiny little brush. But the end of most brushes, whether it's large or small, is about the same size. It comes down to one or two bristles at the end. So like even the best mini painters, they use chunkier brushes than I use. That being said, I do use some small brushes, but it's because I don't have the control that they do.
Yeah.
I've got these banana hands. And so I use I got some like really cheap reading glasses from Walgreens. This podcast sponsored by Walgreens. Too late. And then I put those on under like a reading lamp, and I hold the mini just like inches from my face and just really get in there. But I don't, you know, the we all use the same brushes, and they're not as small as you might think.
Is there like a base coat that you put down? Is there like a primer that you do and then you layer on top of that? What kind of walk me through the steps if you don't
mind. Yeah, that's a great question. So what I do is after I take them off the printer, I snip the supports off, rinse them off. And then I spray what they call a Zenithal highlight. I don't know if you've heard that, but you'll hear that a lot in the mini painting industry, of which I am part. So what you do is you spray like kind of a medium or darker coat as like your base coat. Mm-hmm. And then you take like a lighter primer, and just like it was sunlight, you kind of spray downward on it, and it'll pick up the horizontal surfaces of the mini and highlight those, and that illuminates the shadows and the contours of the mini a little bit better. And all paint is a little bit transparent, even if you don't think it is, so it'll show through. And then you can it allows you to kind of plan out how you're going to paint it. I always do a base coat and then layer. So I'll do a dark base coat on every surface. So if it's like the skin tone here, this guy's a great example. This guy, I'm gonna give you blurry bad footage again of another many. Here we go.
No, it's fine. That's fine.
So this is one of my favorites. He's just an ogre. Maybe if I get out of frame there.
Here, let me try zooming. Make any difference really.
It made no difference whatsoever. Anyway, he's only got like two coats on him. He's got a base coat on his big furry diaper there. We almost got something. And then he's got like a skin tone. So I did a darker skin tone and then just layered up lighter and lighter colors. And that's what I do with everything, you know, whether it has, you know, simple base coats or several.
You dropped something in there that I do want to follow up on. Yeah. When you get them off the printer, you're 3D printing your minis. What's your recommended sponsorship opportunity 3D printer that for somebody getting into it? And the reason I ask, I've actually started to go, well, maybe I want to get a 3D printer and start doing minis as Patreon awards for our patrons, and kind of looking into 3D printers. I'm like, I don't even know where to begin with this. So by all means, please set me down the right path in the world of 3D printing.
Sure. There's a lot of great ones out there. If you want to do mainly minis, I'm a big Elegoo fan. I use an Elegoo Mars. It's not even like their schnazziest new. I just use an Elegoo Mars. We got about 2-3 years ago. And if like mini painting or just having a lot of minis in your campaign is a big thing for you, absolutely invest in one of those. You can go to Thingiverse and download so many 3D models and just run them off. And, you know, you can almost anything you can conceptualize is already there. I put a lot of models on there myself. And then also companies like Eldritch Foundry and Hero Forge, they have they will give you the option to design your mini and then just download the STL file. And then you can slap that on your Elegoo Mars printer and run those off as many as you want, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I totally escaped me right now, but I was looking at something the other day and they're like, oh, you can just download the 3D printer plans for it. And I was like, oh, that's a really, oh, you know what it was? I think it was, it may be Dungeon Alchemist. Dungeon Alchemist I backed in Kickstarter and is about to go live. And I think they will spit out to a 3D printer, I think, and or I think there's some kind of integration there. So it's an aspect of it that I haven't gotten into yet, but we're kind of on the cusp of. So I absolutely appreciate the recommendation. So
yeah, I absolutely would. I shout out Elegoo all the time. There's a lot of great companies out there. It's just they're the ones I'm the most familiar with, and I've never had a single complaint.
Jamie, have you ever played with minis at all? I mean, other than I know you're a huge one of those little cat and bear people, the
calico critters.
Calico critters. I know you're a big calico critters collector.
No, absolutely not. but I did actually play with HeroClix. Is probably the closest thing I had to minis. It's not legit painted minis, but you know, store bought minis. So, I was curious, what's the longest it's ever taken you to like complete one from like start to finish?
Kind of depends on where I start, because a lot of my minis I design from the ground up. Start off as just, you know, four polygons that meshed together.
Awesome.
And I'll deform those and shape those. So I've really gotten into a lot of 3D modeling lately. And if I'm starting there, it's a very long time. Mm-hmm. If I'm just downloading something that somebody else made, depends on how pretty I want it to be. I can do a rush paint job that looks good from 3 feet away in less than an hour. Mm-hmm. If I want it to be like a little work of art, it'll probably take me 2 or 3 days.
Do you play Warhammer at all, or any of the wargaming that's associated with minis, or is it more just the more tied to the D&D character aspect of it and to the Zen aspect of it, like you mentioned?
I have managed to avoid Warhammer so far. The lore is fascinating. I've probably spent several days just reading Warhammer lore, which is silly because like I've never played, but the lore is really cool. I have never played, and I don't want to because I hear it is a time suck.
Yeah, it's one of those things. The closest real world analog I've ever heard of. Just people talk about golf the same way they talk about Warhammer. Like you don't ever want to start because once you do, every Sunday and all the money you'll spend. But if I was going to get sucked into one, trying to hit a tiny ball in a hole or giant miniature robot. I said giant miniature robot. I think I'm going to go with the latter rather than the former. But well, cool, man. Jamie, did you have any other mini questions or anything before we moved on to the cosplay?
I guess what's the biggest mini that you've ever painted?
I'll tag you guys in it later. One I did for a music video for my friend Jenny. It was just a red dragon.
Oh, cool.
And that was like our super rush job. We were, she hit me up on like a Thursday and we needed to film a video on Friday. And I built like this giant snowy terrain. We printed and designed like 6 minis for it. And then we filmed it like that Saturday. So I made a red dragon that was about as big as my head, which is big for a mini. Mm-hmm. I also, for an upcoming like D&D module that I'm working on, created kind of a homebrew creature. The module takes place in like an old lady's garden, and I shrunk the kids, the party.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And so one of the things they have the chance to encounter is a dragonfly dragon, mm-hmm. which I'll upload a picture of that to Twitter later and tag y'all. Cool. And I kind of creatively mixed a lot of the visual aspects of a dragonfly and like a red dragon. So it's got like articulated wings, but it also has like a dragon mouth. And that one is also huge. It's probably 8 inches wide by 9 inches long and about 4 inches tall, which is barely a mini at that point.
You're well into action figure territory at that point. You've made a sectar to do a throwback to a really obscure late 80s, early 90s action figure line, the sectars. They're really cool. Look, check them out, kids. They were these weird hand puppets that
I had one of those.
Dude, I love those guys. I got super into them. My family, I got the whole lineup and I was like, I'm the only one who's playing with these. Why am I the weirdo with the sectars? But they had the cool puppets, and like the dragonfly one would be as big as your arm, and it had a switch and the wings would flap really nicely.
I may have stole that idea.
It had like a wolf face on it. They were these weird kind of
canines and
weird mutant hybrids. In a post-apocalyptic, I think they were the only post-apocalyptic children's cartoon that I watched. There weren't as many apocalyptic landscapes for kids in the 90s. But it was Reaganomics. Let's cross over to the other kind of major field that I think you'd be known for, which is cosplay, obviously. There's the critical role characters that you've cosplayed. Who are some of your cosplay greatest hits?
Sure. My wife and I won Denver Comic Con again with Jenny. Mm-hmm. We did a Witcher 3 group, and so I recreated Geralt's armor from The Witcher 3, the one that's on the cover and stuff.
I think I've seen that photo set. I think that may be how you popped up on my radar for the first time, because I've been a Twitter follow for a bit, and I think that Witcher photo shoot may have been how I originally kind of got into my stream.
It was, that was a fun one. I used legit materials. My goal at the time, I was doing HEMA, like the historical European martial arts mm-hmm. stuff.
Yeah,
and I was pretty good with the longsword at the time, and I was like, I'm going to make Geralt armor, and I'm going to join a HEMA competition, and I'm going to fight No, no. The armor I made was so prohibitively heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, it was sturdy enough, but my God, it was, I think when I put it in like a big Tupperware container, mm-hmm. and it weighs like 110 pounds with all the chain mail. And Geralt is also a little, well, no, thanks to Henry Cavill, he's kind of broader now, but in the games, yeah. he's a little more svelte.
Yeah.
And so I didn't have quite the cat-like lines of Witcher 3 Geralt. I was like, wow, that's a burly Geralt.
he is pretty svelte in the game versus the movie or the yeah. shows, which the shows have been great. I'm really stoked with what they're doing with the character and that world and the supporting cast. And I'm stoked. I think they just announced that, of course, another Witcher game is in development, and I think it's going to be Ciri focused, which is a little bit of a trickier costume for you, I would think.
I'll probably leave that one to more skilled cosplayers than myself. As far as some of the other stuff I've done, I actually gained a bit of traction just because Laura and I made Superman and Wonder Woman costumes to do charity work. Mm-hmm. We'd go visit like children's hospitals and do charity runs. It turned out pretty good. Like, mm-hmm. believe it or not, I make a pretty good Superman. Weird. And so we gained quite a bit of traction just doing that, but the goal was never to be like, hey, look at our cool
yeah.
cause influencer BS. It was just to make kids smile, but I think mm-hmm. that's what really jived with. And so yeah. there's some really cute pictures of me, like giving like a little Spider-Man, like a high five. And mm-hmm. that one is a lot of fun.
Yeah, there's a superhero oriented charity run here in Austin. And I forget, I've done it. Well, pre-COVID, I did it for 2 or 3 years in a row. And man, the Austin cosplay community really came out in force for that. And there's just some amazing Batman and Wonder Womans that showed up to that. More than a couple of full families running in Incredibles gear, which running a 5K in a costume, like some of these people do, no joke, man, no joke at all. I mean, especially in Texas spring, it's starting to get crazy here again. So that was kind of how you got into the scene initially, was doing the charity work, and it kind of broadened out from there, or what's,
You know, it's funny. My first costume, my wife and I were not even dating at the time, mm-hmm. but I thought she was really cute. And she's like, you know, I do this cosplay thing. And I'm like, oh, neat. Sounds lame, but she's cute. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do a cosplay with her and knock it out the box and make it really impressive. And so I was like, I'm going to make a Goliath from Gargoyles. Mm-hmm. And that was my very first cosplay. A little ambitious, pulled it off pretty good considering I'd never done anything else. But there are things I would have done differently now.
I was about to say, that's not a small target for your first swing on that. That's pretty, because you did wings and everything for that, right? I think you've got a picture of it. Yeah,
I did. Lots of wings. There was like 6 hours of body paint involved. I had some like digitigrade stilts that I was walking around on, which made me about 9 feet tall. Ridiculous.
And did you tell her before you showed up in her door at this outfit, or it was just, oh God, what have I gotten myself into?
No. I was like, hey, will you be, I want to be Goliath. Will you do Elisa Maza? Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, sure, I guess. And it was cool. We did that at Denver Comic Con. Mm-hmm. It's now called Fan Expo Denver.
Yeah.
We showed up, and it happened to be like the 20th anniversary of the Gargoyles cartoon. Mm-hmm. And so all the cast was there, and they took us backstage.
Oh,
and
wow. Yeah.
And we got to meet the voice actors that did Elisa. We got to meet Jonathan Frakes, who does Xanatos. He thought that was pretty cool. We got to meet the cute lady from Star Trek, Laura. She played she played Troy.
Yeah.
She was there she is feisty and amazing. And I love
her. She's pretty cool.
Fiery. I love that. And I was just mostly naked in body paint with giant wings and a big wig on. And it was a wild experience.
Well, if you're going to meet the cast of the Next Generation, mostly naked in body paint is the way to do it. from what I've heard.
Left an impression.
So did you how did you because Jenny D, obviously you mentioned Jenny, Jenny D is obviously a very, very big in the cosplay scene. Yeah. Did you guys know each other beforehand, or you met through cosplay, or how did you, where did that friendship spark up?
That's a fun story. So we met through a local swimsuit designer that was doing some nerd themed swimsuits. And so Jenny was, whoa, how did we meet her, Laura?
Her Firefly video.
That was after, wasn't it?
No, that was before.
I don't know anything about time.
Yeah. All right. We met her at Starfest. Well, I met her at a con, and then we met her again at Starfest.
Okay.
And then she recruited us.
So I don't remember the Starfest. So I'm going to say we met as she recruited us for a Firefly fan video that she had made, which is amazing. Actually, I think that was yesterday was the 7th anniversary of that. So I'll blast that on the Twitters. But they had me as Jane. They had Laura as Inara, and Jenny as an adorable little vocalist. So we met on there, and then we just clicked. She's Jenny and Laura are like two peas in a pod. They're very brilliant, very direct women. And so we just started hanging out and doing costume groups together. And basically every time I was putting together a costume group, I would make sure that there was parts for me and Laura and Jenny. And then I'd try and fill it out with everybody else that was just in the local scene.
So besides giving anybody in the chat who's not married a perfect example of what it's like to be married in the last 2 minutes, right. But because like I'm the same way, I have what I firmly believe, and then I have what my wife corrects me about what I firmly believe is being wrong. And I have never felt more connected with one of our guests than I should. Right. I was like, no, your deeply held beliefs of how you remember this are completely made up, Turner. You're like, oh yeah. Okay, sure. Okay. I know better than to disagree with you. You're right. I feel the correction and I respect it. So you get into cosplaying, and I think that's kind of branched out for there. Like I said, we've got to get Harlan cosplayed up, and he's got it pretty easy. Todd the Tiefling the bit trickiest part is Todd is only 5'8". Harlan, I think, is closer to 6'3", 6'4" in real life, Jamie.
6'2". He don't get 6'4".
No, well, I mean, look, I'm 6 feet and he's
6'2".
He bills Todd the Tiefling as a strong 5'8". And then dressed like Idris Elba from The Gunslinger. But then I gotta get him in the full red tiefling makeup, and then the horns. We're just going to put the horns on the hat because he wears kind of a Clint Eastwood Man with No Name style kind of cowboy hat. So that actually solves the how that we attach his head. Any recommendations on body paint or face paint for Harley?
Yeah, timely. One, no one's going to be able to tell how tall he is. It's a camera. No one can tell. That's why I did Geralt. Geralt is not 6'8".
Yeah.
You know, and so cameras just lie. It's great. Body paint. I can give you some good tips, but I will say this today, Jenny D released intro primer to body paint. It's like just today. So check out her channel for sure. I would say, don't go with grease paint. Don't do that. Do like one of the water activated paints and just dab it on with a little makeup brush. Or makeup sponge. Either one is, I don't know the difference. I don't know a lot about makeup. I did my Ford makeup from Critical Role. So he's got like a green to yellow ombre on his chin. And I use Mehron Paradise body paints for that. For Grog, because there's so much surface area and I'm so big, we use an airbrush. Just get down like a base coat. You're gonna want a good base coat and then do contouring on top of it. And you know, I'm sure your wife can help you with that. She knows about contouring probably.
But does Harlan's wife is the question, because he's the
one. I don't know.
I'm lucky. I just have to dress up like a short story. I just have to get a mascot costume made and then wear that. So when you get out and you go to a show in costume, is that a 4-hour day, a 6-hour day? How long are you made up and in character?
Yeah, it's funny you mention that, because I do stay in character when I was doing Brock Sampson, I'd stay in a Patrick Warburton all day and get a real crappy voice.
Oh my God.
The entire day. I'm Brock Sampson and I'm just a little disenfranchised with all the nerds around me. Anyway, It depends on the costume and the comfort level of the costume. And it depends on, you know, the comfort level of Laura's costume. Mm-hmm. When I was Brock Sampson, easy costume, freaking golf pants and a polo shirt and a mullet wig. Laura dressed up as Molotov Cocktease, and she has just got like a deep V down to like her, below her belly button, that is just physically glued to her body, and stiletto heels. She's like, you got 3 hours.
Yeah, I can definitely see that being, I can't even imagine, man, having to move around in pleather and heels. I mean, I can't imagine moving around in pleather and heels, but that's a different show.
I can imagine that for you.
Hey, all right. He's here for it, folks. So when you get to go and you do the cons and you do the shows, do you actually get to kind of enjoy the show, or is it more of a work kind of work gig?
Not as most cosplayers will tell you, unless they're doing like a casual cosplay, you're just in pain. Just in pain the whole time. Laura says Sunday is casual day. Sunday I usually don't even go. I'm in too much pain, and I've been wearing 110 pounds of armor. When I'm in full costume, and like I said, I don't break character. So it feels like work, but it's like the best kind of work. It's super fun. As an actor and a performer, like, I thrive on that chaos, and I love to do the voice of whoever I'm dressed as, and it's still work though.
So thank you for the transition, because man, you're making these segues so easy. He's a real professional, folks. Speaking of acting and being an actor, let's talk about your credit for just getting started. How life affirming is having a professional credit on IMDb as good looking guy make you feel as a person? Like, that is like major production, Rene Russo. Yeah, I played good looking guy. Like, that is, I would have cards printed with that. I at best I can do is surly carnival barker. That's all I've got, really.
What a good thing to be.
And I think somebody referred to Jamie earlier as Ron Jeremy's illegitimate son.
No, Ron Swanson, not Ron Jeremy.
Ron Swanson. Okay, my bad. Ron Swanson. Totally different character. Stay classy, Jamie. Stay classy.
Keep it classy, buddy.
Yeah,
that was wild. So I actually ended up getting that gig because their other good-looking guy backed out because he had booked something else. I'm handsome in like a lumberjack way. You know, I'm not like this. I'm not a smooth, svelte, beautiful boy. Handsome. I am like this guy can fix your car and chop down a tree. Handsome. So in that they were kind of wanting a little bit more of a, I hate this term, but I don't know what else to say. Like a pretty boy, handsome. So I had hair down to my shoulders when I showed up on set, man, like this big beard, and they're like, nope. And they gave me a haircut. They shaved me like clean as I've ever been shaved. And then they had a suit made for me in like 5 hours, which I didn't think was a thing that could occur, but they did.
Wow.
And this was for 15, 20 seconds of screen time, maybe a minute tops. I don't know if you've seen Just Getting Started. Very few people did, which was a bummer because it was cool to like meet and hang out with Rene Russo. Mm-hmm. It was gracious, charming lady. Oh my God. Just poise and charisma. Like in D&D, charisma goes to 20, and Rene Russo has a 40. I mean, it's just like a deity level charisma. It's wild. And she could tell, like, I felt overwhelmed by that. And so she just did her absolute best to be like, to make me feel comfortable, which was really cool of her. And so she's trying to make me feel comfortable. I hit my mark. The director's like, action. Right. And my cue is after Tommy Lee Jones and Morgan Freeman walk in, and they're having an argument about something. And then they see Rene Russo, and they're like, hey, we should go flirt with her. And my gig was to walk over and start flirting with Rene Russo. That's the whole thing of it. And then they get frustrated because I'm the good looking guy. So I hit my mark. Director goes, action. And I see Tommy Lee Jones and Morgan Freeman walk in having this casual conversation. And I'm like, and I hear the director go, hey, Jesse. Hey, Jesse. And then I realize he's talking to me, and I'm like, Sorry, there's Morgan Freeman over there. So I ruined the first take on that one, but I hit my marks after that, which is a bummer because, like, behind the scenes of a movie, I'm sure you guys are aware, there's a small city that makes every little scene happen. There's probably between 20 and 150 people just making every moment of a feature film happen. And so for me to have just gone, I wasn't even nervous. I was just like, oh my God, would you look at that?
Great experience. We've done some collaborations with a guy I know from way back in the day named Christian Stokes, who's been a long time acting stuntman. Actor and stuntman, and he's done a lot of stuff, and he's really kind of opened my eyes to kind of. And then we do a bonus podcast, which is a weird supernatural rewatch / D&D homebrew deal. So I spend a portion of the month doing really deep dives on IMDb and the Canadian acting scene, and really just getting a feel for. I have a tremendous respect for working actors now, and the people who play the smaller roles from scene to scene to scene to scene to scene. And it's really interesting to see how those threads kind of weave together, especially kind of in the Canadian movie industry, where there are not one, but two professional newscasters for CW shows that we've discovered. Like, there's a man and a woman who have like over 30 acting credits, just as that actor that you see for 2 minutes announcing that the Green Arrow has struck again on the CW show. And it's like, man, that's awesome. I love that aspect that you know, that you can go after something and have that be the piece of your creative career. Are you still working on the acting side of things, or have you shifted your focus a little bit?
I've shifted focus. The pandemic. I credit it with killing most of my acting career. As far as like staying connected with my Hollywood contacts. It just made it hard, you know. I was also in that like rock and Hollywood shape in 2019. Now I'm in like guy that plays a lot of D&D shape.
Familiar with that. I went from training to run my first marathon to winded walking up the stairs shape over the course of the pandemic. Yeah. And I am just now making that transition back into the real world and going, okay, I gotta do things again. I got to start moving and just for general health purposes. I'm not looking forward to that, man, to trying to go, hey, you know, that 2 years worth of effort that you put in, yeah, you're starting from scratch again, bub. That's not the exciting part of it, but you know, it's something you got to do, you know what I mean? Do you have a particular workout routine? Like, are you a CrossFit guy? Are you, you know, what's kind of this bit? This next portion of the stream is explicitly for Harland. Harland will record this bit for you later on what the reps look like. So kind of walk us through what your routine looks like. Are you regiment? Regiment is the word that I'm looking for. Regiment. Sorry.
There we go. In an ideal world, my regiment looks like CrossFit 2 to 3 times a week, and then powerlifting 1 or 2 times a week. So I do a lot of like traditional like deadlift, squats, bench press. I do a lot of Olympic style lifts, military press. But I like CrossFit is, I know it's a whole thing. But I do like the intensity and the community that you get in a CrossFit gym. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I haven't been into one since 2019.
Yeah.
It's funny, like my memories of how I used to train kind of intimidate me from getting back into it because it was it was hard. Yeah. It was so hard.
There was a time when I would wake up to go to Orange Theory at 5 a.m, 3 days a week, and I don't remember who that dude is. Don't know. I'm pretty sure I don't like that guy because he talked about reps with people and screw that guy and his mile time. And that's in fact a running gag with Harlan's kind of bro-y character on the podcast. He constantly talks about his mile time. And I was like, oh God, I was that guy. I was that bro.
As a 300-pound gentleman, I've never had much of a mile time. I think my fastest one ever was 7:30, which is that's cooking for 300 pounds.
That's lightning fast for somebody bigger. Yeah,
man. Yeah. I mean, I laid down and cried for a good half hour afterwards, but I wanted to get it under 8. That was my goal.
Yeah.
And then I got under 8 and I'm like, I want to get it under 7. That didn't happen, but I did get a 7:30 for, and like I said, for a big man, that is tough.
You had a little a part. You actually got to act opposite Nick Nolte, right?
Yeah.
That was Graves, correct?
Graves, love that set. Yeah, I got to work opposite Nick Nolte. It's funny. I was actually going out for a different part than that one as well. And they're like, again, they wanted more of a svelte kind of traditional, less intimidating looking character. Mm-hmm. That was something I ran into a lot, as an actor. It's like, I mean, yeah, you're good looking, but you're also 6'8" and you're built like a dump truck. Mm-hmm. So they're like, do you do impressions? And I'm like, totally, which I guess I do. Right. But I never thought of that. And they're like, can you do a Nick Nolte impression? I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And so they're like, cool, here's some sides. Take these outside. And so I went to my car and I read these sides. And for the life of me, I couldn't remember how Nick Nolte sounded.
Yeah, I'm trying to go right now. It's like, oh my God, what does Nick Nolte sound like?
So I jumped on the YouTubes and just brought up a bunch of Nick Nolte work. The problem is Nick Nolte doesn't sound like what he did sound like. He sounds different now.
Yeah.
He sounds like a coffee can full of rocks now. So I tried to find like some recent Nick Nolte, and I came up with a close enough approximation that they seem to have loved me. And they're like, do you do anybody else? I'm like, yeah, you name it.
I'm the rich little of big guys, folks.
You know, I am I'm the biggest rich little.
There you go.
And so they're like, do you do a Bill Clinton? I'm like, hell yeah, I do a great Bill Clinton. I do a fantastic Bill Clinton. I was just kind of spitballing it. But they're like, fantastic. And so they had me throw in Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon. And then they're like, now do Graves, which was Nick Nolte's mm-hmm. character. And I did my best. And they're like, hired. And I got to work with my nice. Boy crush, Skylar Astin, who is this beautiful vocalist from Pitch Perfect. And that's one of that's like my guilty pleasure movie.
I love that movie. I'll tell you flat out, I love Pitch Perfect.
Right.
My name's really Fat Patricia is probably one of the best subtle lines that I'm totally blanking on her name now.
Me too.
What is her name? Who's the actor?
Nobody's Googling anything right now.
We'll move on from that one. yeah, man, I love Pitch Perfect. I don't have as much admiration for the sequels, but that first movie is a great, great comedy movie, no matter what you say. I got a weird thing with cover music. I love a good cover song. If it's done right and it puts its own spin on it, let's go. Not so much Weezer, hey, we're going to do a shot for shot remake of the songs. No. But if it's a unique take on an existing classic, I am here for it.
Same.
And I really went down a really weird cover song wormhole on iTunes for when iPods first came out. It was like, dude, why do you have all these? Like, there's not a single main original track on this. Like, look, this is what the internet hath wrought. That's not my fault. And I'm sorry if I seem distracted for a second. We just got notification that Jazz, our other cast member, apparently his computer has been bricked by power outages.
Wow.
So we are two men down in the last month. So he is working on getting that booted back up. But we lost Andrew, who normally appears on the podcast as a animatronic bear, his motherboard fry, Jamie, or what? What did he have fry recently?
I think he blew out his motherboard and his hard drive or something. Great.
Now, luckily, 4/5 of the cast are IT professionals or programmers. So I'm pretty confident we'll be back up and running sooner rather than later. But I apologize if I'm not looking out of my phone at a distraction. It's like, oh my God, another man down, another man down. But it's been a weird time for technology, man, with the pandemic. Yeah. I've had, you know, we slowly have been upgrading our tech as we, as the podcast and stream have grown. And I've had two or three new pieces of equipment fail. And I think that's just tied to the manufacturing side of things. But I think a little bit less of a risk with that when you're the technology, when you're the show, I would imagine. On the costume side of things. So let's going forward, dude, you got a great voice. Are you doing any voiceover work or any actual play, any podcasting? What's kind of in the future for you?
Yeah, I've been selling my wares lately with that. I just recorded one. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it. I may be in NDA territory. Right. I don't know. If not, I'll shout him out on Twitter later. But I just did a pretty extensive voice read not too terribly long ago. I really want to get more into it. One, because I just like to do the voices. And it's funny, like once I started trying to become a YouTube guy or whatever, like half the comments are always just like, I just want this guy to read to me while I go to bed. I'm really trying to get into that more intently. And you would think that, I'm not. I just want to. I'm not putting forth any effort. So I don't want to make it seem like, he's really efforting and he's just running into obstacles. No, I just want to and haven't put forth any thought or research into doing that professionally.
Are you doing any actual plays regularly? I know you did some stuff with Dice Tower Theater and you've got some streams where you're playing D&D, but is there any, either short to mid or long-term plans to do an actual play, or D&D stream in the future?
There's some very cool things in the works that are in the NDA territory right now.
This is the NDA. That's fantastic though, man. That's always exciting. And it's been one of the neater things for us to brush up with once we've kind of gone from the very periphery to start to inch our way towards the kind of the inner ring of the TTRPG community we are now in like show business circles that can't talk about the things that they're doing until the contracts talk about the things that they're doing. Whereas we're just goobers in a closet wearing a Mario hat. You know what I mean? So we get to be a little bit, but that's awesome that you've got stuff coming down the count. What's your dream voiceover gig? Like if you had any like video game, cartoon, TV show, what would be your dream voice to get to do or show to get to be on?
Oh man. That's a great question. Back when I was an actor, what, honey?
Bio.
Yeah, I'd love to do some voice work for BioWare. BioWare, if you're watching, bring your boy aboard. I am versatile and handsome. back when I was a full-time actor, directors would always be like, so what do you want out of an acting career? And I said, I want to become the 2000s version of Kurt Russell in 1988. I wanted to be like, I wanted to do comedy action.
Right. Trouble in Little China, Escape from New York, Snake Plissken in 2000 for sure.
That's what I wanted.
But not the Snake Plissken we got in 2000. That was much more disappointing.
That will pretend that didn't even happen. I know what you're talking about. As far as voice acting, I would love to do things. I love RPGs. Mm-hmm. So I would love to do voice work for characters that you spend a lot of time with and grow to love and or hate. I would love to work with Bethesda. I'm a big mm-hmm. Elder Scrolls fan. Huge Elder Scrolls fan. So if they ever need a gravelly guy that can just groan at their players for hours and hours, but if they need a dwarf that can sell them ales and blacksmith stuff for them, I'm your guy. I don't know. There's my 2 second audition.
There's your pitch. Well, Jamie's in the gaming industry. He makes educational games though, so he may need a counting gnome at some point. I think a little bit of a different direction that you're looking to go for than Grover fights an ogre. That would, has there been a Sesame Street D&D? I think we're at that point where there needs to be some kind of D&D Sesame Street crossover in the zeitgeist with how pervasive how did you start playing D&D? What was your first introduction to it?
My first introduction was my sweet wife tried to get me involved in a one shot. And I like to tell this story because it kind of frames how I look at D&D. Mm-hmm. One shots, I enjoy them on their face. But what I love about D&D is the progression over session after mm-hmm. session after session. So that didn't have the appeal to me.
Yeah.
And right the day before, I think, that we were supposed to do this one shot, my daughter called me and she's like, hey, will you take me to Warped Tour? I'm like, hell yeah. When is it? She's like, tomorrow. I'm like, yeah, okay. So we drove through the night from Denver to Santa Fe and went to Warped Tour the next day instead of me playing my first D&D game. Fast forward like 3 or 4 years, Jenny D comes along, my cosplay compadre. Oh, and she's like, "Hey, I've been listening to this thing called Critical Role." Mm-hmm. And at the time, I was working a lot as an actor, and I was like, "Oh yeah, that sounds like a lot." But since I was driving to gigs, I was driving, like I said, from Denver to Albuquerque, Denver to Santa Fe. I had a lot of road time. So I started listening to Campaign 2 of Critical Role, and I'm like, well, this is really good. This, I like that, you know, there was emotionality, there was continuity to the story. They would level up and they'd be so excited about it. They'd roll dice and cool things would happen. And shortly thereafter, Jenny's like, I'm thinking about starting a game. And she DM'd, she was my first DM.
Oh, wow.
She ran a campaign that I still love. I love my character. I love Laura's character. Laura played with me. Jenny's fiance, Josh, was in the game. And our beautiful friend, Stefan, was in the game. Our friend, Kara, was in the game. And I loved it. I was instantly hooked. I was a little bit too excited. I'm a little bit neurodivergent, so I get very hyper-focused on things.
Yeah.
And so I walked into, you know, Jenny's like toddler steps as a DM, like, oh, do I like this or not? With like a lot of intensity and like 40 page backstory and all. And she really showed a lot of patience and skill as a DM, because I was just throwing the kitchen sink at her every session. And she's just like, yeah, we'll roll with that punch, I guess.
Well, hey, man, there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, that's the beauty. But I agree with you wholeheartedly, both as a DM and as a player. The one shot, I think, is the trickiest thing out there, because especially as a DM, especially if you're doing it for a stream, it's like, okay, I got 3 hours to get a lot of times strangers from point A to point B publicly. And oh, by the way, they're going to be playing Agents of Chaos, all on some level with magical powers. And then, you know, from the flip side, as somebody who's played in a few, if getting the opportunity to play a build or a character type that I just am, you know, am never going to get the opportunity to do, either because I'm not going to bring an NPC of that flavor into the podcast, or I DM 99% of the time. I don't get a ton of time to actually get to play. And unfortunately, that goes all the way back to when I first started, when me and a couple of my friends bought the Red Box together, and like, well, somebody has to be the DM. And I was like, I guess I've had it the longest. I think it is a cool opportunity as a player to flex some chops that you might normally not get to do, but it's still, you don't have the progression system. You don't necessarily get to inhabit the character as much or spend as much time with them. You still can write that 40 page backstory. My D&D Beyond account has a frightening number of characters, which will never see the light of day, and variants on them. And they all live in their own special little world. So cool, man. Short term, anything? We're getting kind of up on time, and we'll throw some questions out to the chat here in a second. But is there anything particularly coming up that you can promote that you want to mention?
Oh yeah. Saturday, I do a weekly stream on my channel. I don't know if you want me to hype that or not. It's fine.
Absolutely. You are gracious enough to come on and hang out let me prime you for 3D printer and body paint questions. You talk about what you want to talk about, my friend.
All right. So every Saturday at 11:30 Central, I invite Twitch chat to play D&D with me. And what I do is I pick 3 to 4 players just out of Twitch chat, and we roll dice, man. I throw them on my Zoom channel, and I have a story. It's a continuous story that we're basically running a campaign, but I use 3 to 4 strangers every time.
That's awesome, man.
That's fun. It's a lot of it's a good workout as a DM, because like, you don't know them and you don't know what's coming. But so far it's been great every time. And then I allow chat to affect the game, so we do polls. One of the polls last week was they were in a chase scene. There was a bunch of gnolls chasing these level two players. They were gonna die if they didn't keep running. And I was throwing obstacles in their way, and I was letting chat decide. So I would throw up a poll. All right, what is laying across the road? Is it a fallen log, or is it a flock of Canadian geese? You know what they chose. They chose the flock.
You gotta go with the geese every time.
And you know, the players came up with some great innovations to like sick the Canadian geese on the knolls, and I was like, great, you guys slow them down immensely. But I also let them make huge decisions. Like I introduced some primary characters to the campaign in session one, and I basically had one disappear because I gave chat. All right, the goal was the party was escorting them to a city, but she has the ability to teleport. But her teleports were getting out of control, and she opened up this big portal. And I'm like, okay, chat, does she go through that portal, or does she go with the party to their final destination?
Right.
Chat's like, she goes through the portal. That's going to affect every session going forward. And that's what I love about this format is that I'm letting them make the big decisions and I'm just trying to roll with the punches the best I can. So that's the thing I'm working on right now. Saturdays, 11:30 Central on my channel. That's twitch.tv/JesseJurdak. What else do I have coming up, baby? And she says,
Well, look, dude, that's not a small thing. We'll get the link up to that in the Discord gang for everybody who's listening, and definitely make sure that we get our patrons involved to swing by and stop by and check it out. Dude, hey, mad respect as a DM for that. That is a ballsy move just to do it as strangers, but then also to put that level of control in. That's how we get Bodie McBoatfaces, my friend. And, you know, to do it from a narrative standpoint is just really awesome. You know, just hands down the, I do an ATX kind of gaming for professionals group, and had somebody approach me like, hey man, you want to put this together? And it was like, this is an opportunity for me to DM for strangers, which up to that point I had never done before, you know, and this was about a year ago, and it is so different than friends or associates. You know, I was just telling Jamie, one of the things that was kind of the cheat for our podcast was I knew these guys beforehand and they knew each other well before they knew me. So there's, you know, 5, 6, 10 years of chemistry built up rolling into the cast at the very beginning, as opposed to, hi, I'm Stan. Here's my things that I like and I don't like. And this is what I'll be playing a cleric this evening. Just a whole different vibe that you can bring to it. And, being comfortable to work with that, I'm impressed. And I will definitely tune in to check that out, man. I'm so excited.
Jump on and play, man. We will have fun.
For sure, dude, for sure. All right, gang, real quick, who's got a question for Jesse? And I always struggle with the fact that there is a delay on this. I'm like, why aren't they responding more quickly? I'm also terrible at monitoring the chat during the stream. So much so that when Mr. Bible Pants logged out, he explicitly went out of his way to reverse psychology to say, don't acknowledge that I'm logging out. I didn't notice the shirt over the goddamn bear on the wall. Yes, compliments to the bear in the background. No shaky. Yeah, don't want to paint minis. Tweak from South Park. Sorry, I'm just. That's right. We mentioned of Harlan's collection of precious Prescient Moments figurines. They're actually Hummel figurines, guys. Oh, not Prescient Moments figurines. Real talk. I assume that she lost the war. This is the moment where I awkwardly look for questions. You had to have a what made? I'm not sure what that even means.
I had they made a suit for me on
what's that's right. There we go. That's right. See, he's already better at the chat than I am, gang. Look at that. I'm
looking at it.
Let's see. She's from Mean Girls, Bicycles. Wasn't he Abomination in one of the Hulk movies? That would be a cool role, man. Abomination.
That'd be sweet. I'd love to do that.
Have you ever done any mocap or anything like that for video games? Or
no, I haven't. I would love to, though. I'm a pretty physically expressive actor. You know, I got into that because of my love of like improv and MMA. Yeah, I was an MMA fighter before I took up acting.
Oh, there you go.
Fun story.
How many years did you do MMA?
About 8 years.
Wow, dude, Yeah, that's not a small amount.
I was getting long in the tooth for a fighter. I was just racking up injuries. Trigger warning injuries. I blew off both of my biceps, so I had to have them reattached. It was just a hell of a thing. So I was like, man, I'm still big and muscular and physical, but I don't want to get kicked in the head for a living no more.
Yeah, that's why I moved off a cattle ranch at the age of 20. When I as soon as I could, possibly. I grew that's up on hard. A ranch. Yeah, I got bad knees from getting thrown over fences for the first 18 years of my life. So what's a monster role? If you got to play a monster, what monster would you want to play?
Give me a werewolf any day. Give me a werewolf. I want to be a werewolf. I got to play a were-tiger on the follow-up to True Blood, but that was... That was not a... I wanted to be a werewolf. A were-tiger is a little exotic for my big American ass. want to be a... Just give me a cool werewolf role. That would be awesome. Or like maybe something creepy, like a really... Like biopunk Frankenstein would be pretty cool. Not like a Lon Chaney one, but like a, like something like really upsetting, would be kind of a cool thing.
Dude, what was Sean Bean's weird, secretly a Frankenstein show?
Oh, I remember that one.
I'm gonna pop this guy up here to the Googles, my friend. That was one of those, Sean Bean Frankenstein.
That one was wild.
Yeah. It was like, I wasn't expecting this to be a Frankenstein. And it's a Frankenstein. This is the Frankenstein Chronicles. Well, you would think I would have seen it coming with a title like that. I guess I did expect him to be the Frankenstein. But yeah, that was a wild show, man. But was surprisingly good. I think 3 seasons. So if you haven't checked that out, Sean Bean is fantastic in anything he does. I know this is probably like asking which of your kids are your favorite. Do you have a favorite cosplay in the past?
Ford from Critical Role. I worked the hardest on that one. And I feel like it's the most screen accurate. I really, really like my Ford cosplay. It's also made out of saddle hide leather. So the leather is like that thick. So shaping that into like what it looks like was no small effort. And I'm really proud of that one.
And you're doing that leather work yourself. And I know you mentioned you made the Geralt armor out of real materials. Is that, I mean, Harlan is actually training to be a blacksmith. He started forging knives. Of all the streams for him to miss, what he gets. That's what he gets for being a good dad. We'll show him.
How dare he?
He did text me to apologize for being a good dad though too. And I was like, dude, this was the guy. I did in fact, reach out to him to intimidate you and you're not even here for it. If you could have anyone guest as a player on your stream, who would you pick?
Oh man. My wife says me, she's guesting on it on Saturday. Stop it. If I could have anyone, let's see here. I'm going to go ahead and say, just because I recently got to meet him and know him a little bit, probably Mark Meer. He is the voice of Manship from the Mass Effect series, and I got to play D&D with him quite a bit last week. My wife and I fell in love over an argument about Mass Effect. We were at a cast party for an acting thing we were doing at the time. Mm-hmm. And we immediately got into an argument about which Shep was the best. I was correct. It was Man Shep, the Paragon Man Shep. She likes to play Renegade Fem Shep because she is incorrect. She's scowling at me. And so that became kind of a fun little pillar of our relationship as our disagreement about Mass Effect. So for us to be able to play D&D with Mark would be pretty cool. I would love for him to guest just because he's important to my marriage in a weird way.
He's done a ton of stuff with BioWare, with Baldur's Gate. He aborted Baldur's Gate stream because Andrew's computer is back up, we'll be starting our Baldur's Gate stream back up for Baldur's Gate 2 very specifically. He's done some Dragon Ages in addition to Manship. Femship has the bigger following, I will say. Oh,
yeah, I think
There are a lot of hardcore Femship, Renegade Femship stands out there.
Yeah.
But I played Paragon Manship.
Indeed,
I did my first time. I don't think I ever played the third one in that trilogy. I loved Mass Effect 1 and 2. I never made my way around to 3 because when it came out, there was such a wailing and gnashing of teeth about the ending. And I was just at a point where I just didn't have a ton of time to play video games. And it's like, man, I'd come off of one or two fantasy series, book series that just didn't have a great ending. And I'm like, I just don't have my heart in it for another bad ending. Right. Now. So
They're all remastered now. You could play them again.
That's true. BioWare actually had us do like a little commercial spot on the commercial for the remaster. And so Laura and I talked about how, you know, Mass Effect was important to us and how we had a Mass Effect themed wedding.
That's awesome.
And then BioWare contacted us and they're like, hey, you nerds, you want to be on a commercial? And we're like, no. But we did it anyway. The remaster is good. And there's some DLC that actually smooth out the edges on that rougher ending that was originally launched with Mass Effect 3.
That's what I've heard, and that's actually made me consider going back and playing the remaster and diving back in and finishing it back out. But I have, I have like 3 hours of free time a week. After you subtract podcasting, podcast production, pre-production for the spinoff podcast, the stream, bonus content generation, then actually spending time with my family, and the jobby job, I have exactly 3 hours left in the week. And it's like, okay, this week that got spent on 3 episodes of Our Flag Means Death, which is such an incredible show. And I'm so desperately in love with, if you haven't checked that out.
What network is that on? Because I love that group of actors and comedians.
HBO Max.
Max. That's why I don't have it. Okay. Yeah. Right,
Laura. I don't even know how I have HBO Max. I think I have it free through AT&T. I have random logins that, and not like piratey logins, but I don't have Paramount Plus. That's the one that I don't have that I'm probably going to end up having to get, because what's coming out on that now? Like not Halo. Just Star Trek.
Halo's there coming
in. The Halo show that looks like it might be okay.
Could be.
Possibly. We'll see. So cool, gang. Did you play Mass Effect Andromeda? I think is the last question from the chat.
I did. I didn't hate it. Everybody hated Mass Effect Andromeda. It's funny. Like, I on my memories yesterday or the day before, I saw like a tweet I had made about it, and it was that the animations aren't that good, but the story's okay.
Yeah,
that was my impression when it was new, and I stand by it.
And then we're going to close out with Dreekin's question. After you started making your own minis, did finding a place to put them all quickly become a problem?
If I could adjust the camera without it being a huge thing. So right, I'm looking at the camera, right under it is my monitors. And then there is just what should be normal desk space full of just nothing. It's just, it looks like a parade of maybe 200 to 600 minis that I have designed, printed, and painted. It's my wife is very patient.
That is phenomenal. Emperor's clay army of minis just staring back at you. That is fantastic, man. That's awesome. Well, cool, gang. We're going to wrap it up then. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Jesse, for agreeing to come on. It was a quick turnaround. We always appreciate anybody who comes on and spends all the time with us. We always do a part. I always make the cast answer a parting question. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, Eldrin, Jamie, you're the only one. Jamie's on deck to have to cosplay as Tingle from The Legend of Zelda. We are two patrons away from Jamie having to, this is going to be really weird, but the long story, have to record a stream dressed as Tingle from Zelda while folding his a bunch of laundry and reading Todd Stashwick's IMDb page. Our fans have some very specific kinks. Other than Tingle, Jamie, who would be your cosplay option of choice given the opportunity and the resources?
Oh, man. I would normally say Link from Legend of Zelda because I love Zelda, but like Tingle is so adjacent to that I feel like that's a cop out.
That's okay. We're forcing you to do Tingle. That doesn't count, man. You can do Link, and I think that's a pretty realistic cosplay too, man. That's not too bad. That's just a cap, a sword, and a tunic. So cool, gang. We're going to wrap it up then. Thank you so much, Jesse, for joining us. And everybody, as always, we hope you enjoyed the show. Now, old man, stumble around and hit the button until the stream stops. In stream now. Is it over?